Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Imagine that one day you're summoned before a government panel. Even though you haven't committed any crime or been formally charged with one, you are repeatedly questioned about your political views, accused of disloyalty, and asked to incriminate your friends and associates. If you don't cooperate, you risk jail or losing your job. This is exactly what happened in the United States in the 1950s as part of a campaign to expose suspected communists. Named after its most notorious practitioner, the phenomenon known as McCarthyism destroyed thousands of lives and careers.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Springhill, Josh, and the Luma Mommy herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the McCarthy hearings. Studio with the skeptic, the mom, the beard, and yours truly in the most rad truliest way, Rad Dad 2020. Here to talk about the McCarthy hearings. A Larry pick. Well chosen. I, like most of us, I think when we suggest a topic to each other, sometimes we look at it and go, oh no, it might not. I mean, we're a conspiracy podcast. What can we learn from this? Well, I learned a lot. And I'm excited to talk about it.
As much as we did with the dong wrangler?
I learned nothing that episode.
True story. I learned more about each one of you than I did.
I think at one point in that episode, I actually asked, how's everybody's bowel movements?
Probably.
What, yeah. It's
we're the number one and number two.
True. So anyway, I figure we start each episode this way, so we might as well pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road and get real. A little bit of truth corner action. Now, I didn't know what McCarthyism was beforehand. Now, besides Larry, did you guys have any kind of idea?
I thought we were doing another episode about Paul McCarthy. I know McCartney, but I was like, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck this is.
Yeah. A distant senator of Wisconsin's. Yeah. Yeah. No. So McCarthyism is by the dictionary term, a vociferous.
The one time he doesn't say dick.
Yeah.
A vociferous campaign against alleged communists in the U.S. government and other institutions carried out under Senator Joseph McCarthy in the period of 1950 to 1954. I would argue it's longer than that, but. Many of the accused were blacklisted or lost their jobs, although most did not, in fact, belong to the Communist Party. Now, if you're a fan of this show, you'll know that we covered Jim Jones. He was a socialist and a communist. I mean, his whole beliefs were I think at the time, especially before his whole world got rocked, when people started investigating him, his whole idea was to start the so-called communist, or so I think it was more focused on socialist, which is why I think a lot of times nowadays, when it comes to politics, you have your left and your right, and then maybe your centrists and your Rand Pauls and your kind of wild cards. With this time period, things got so erupted by Joseph McCarthy's speech, especially when he was running for office and basically spelled out, like, I have 15 people on this list who I know right now are in state government and they're communists. There was a way, especially post-World War II, after we just, I mean, the Nazis are almost a joke in my mind. It's like, are you telling me these guys baked a bunch of people? They killed six men. They tried to eradicate a race. And then, I mean, it's like a comic book. Mm-hmm. They also had skulls on.
You mean the ridiculous numbers?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're real.
They are real. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, like, if you were to tell somebody, and they had no knowledge of World War II, mm-hmm. you sit them down and you go, hey, by the way, there was this group called the Nazis.
That this just came out today. I read an article.
Oh, nice.
I want to make sure I got this right. So go ahead and talk. Oh, okay. I pull this up.
Well, I was just going to say how ridiculous it would have seemed to say, like, oh yeah, there was this group. They performed like surgeries. They like removed limbs, like Mengele, you know, Hitler, the way he incited violence. It just ramped and it ramped and it ramped up.
Okay. This is so unbelievable. I had to pull it up. Because I thought maybe my mind had got it wrong, but I am correct. Nearly 2/3 of U.S. young adults, unaware 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. Nearly 2/3 of U.S. young adults.
What, do they give a description of what they consider to be young adult? Like, from what age to what age?
The study of millennial and Generation Z adults aged 18 to 39. So pretty much everybody younger than me.
Mm-hmm. Has no idea that 6...
Yeah. Almost a quarter of respondents said they believe the Holocaust was a myth. So 23% think it's a myth or exaggerated. God. That's what their parents had told them. Mm. 1 in 8 had said they definitely had not heard or even heard about the Holocaust. And more than half had said they'd seen Nazi symbols on their social media platforms. 50-60% say they see Nazi symbols on their social media platforms and in their own communities. And 50% had seen Holocaust denial or distortion posts on social media.
Hmm.
Yikes.
All right.
It's real. My great-grandmother immigrated from Poland to here because of that.
It's crazy. Like, I've seen it all the time. Like, people, like, walking through their neighborhood, and they take a picture because someone's flying a Nazi flag.
My favorite one's when they don't know how to draw a swastika.
Uh-huh.
It's like 2 sevens making out. And it's like spray painted on the side of a mailbox. I'm like, what? I know what you're going for, but you failed miserably, sir.
Oh, man.
The swastika.
Is it those sevens 69ing? What's going on here?
Well, I think it's hard, too, because American education, just in general, is kind of a mess. And my God, even I remember when I was in high school learning about World War II, even when I was in middle school and learning about World War II, but we never really covered like the injustices and the horror of what went on. We kind of glazed over that part. And I think that's the most important part. It was only because I was interested in the topic and I went on my own to do the research myself that I was able to uncover what had actually happened. But like, if you open up a high school textbook,
it's all they really so basic.
All American education wants to focus on when it comes to like war involvement is what we won.
Winning.
Yeah.
Right.
You never hear about what the other side did or
what the cost was.
Yes. Exactly.
If I'm not mistaken, there's only like two or three book companies that actually make the textbooks in all of America,
mm-hmm. which is,
so I mean, who knows? That could be something we could cover, see where the money goes, yeah. where it's coming from.
That's a great concept. And you brought up,
you know, the Nazis and the atrocity of World War II. Slavery for us was like not even a day. We didn't even mm-hmm. spend a day on it.
Yeah.
Like it was like yep. a couple pages of slavery.
That was the same as I remember vividly in high school. It was the same thing that we got up to the Vietnam War, spent like 2 days on it, and that was it. Yeah. And it was the same thing. It was like, yep, it happened.
Anything that
we won. And I'm like, we didn't though.
Anything that seems negative for America. Mm-hmm. It seemed in the textbooks was just glossed over.
Yeah, for sure.
Like I don't remember learning anything about what we did to Native Americans until I was in my 20s.
Nope.
A lot of people still put Columbus on this high pedestal, and it's like it wasn't. Yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. Mid-20s before I really looked into what he did, and it's like, how do we look at this guy in such high regard?
Yeah, we give him his own holiday.
Well,
Martin Luther King, that was a fight in my lifetime to get his mm-hmm. holiday. Like Arizona was like, we're not celebrating that guy's day.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, I never knew anything about Black Wall Street until I watched Watchmen. Until,
this year.
Yeah.
This is the first I've ever heard of it. And you read about it and it's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I've heard they're picking perhaps a city in Michigan, perhaps on our side of the state, to be the new Black Wall Street.
I'm going to be real with you. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
The Tulsa Massacre, 1921. It's absolutely horrendous.
Black people created their Wall Street because they weren't welcome. And so
they tried to do their own thing.
So we bombed it.
We bombed it.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
It is one of the most sobering stories I've heard. And
I'm 44 and I just learned it. Mm-hmm. How did I not know this?
And black people are like, well, we would have told
you. We've been telling you.
Right.
You don't listen. All history matters.
Because they're not telling them in a peaceful way.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
do it peacefully, but not on a football field, not on a basketball court, not on a tennis court.
Not in the streets.
And not in the streets.
This episode's going to be tough.
That's fine. Larry _Gal_Gal if you want to complain.
No.
Send him there. I don't care. I'll block
him. Send him to @RyanHerrick. I'll treat him very nicely by blocking you. So with this, there's... And I sent this to Josh in April earlier, but it affected me because it's the fall on your sword conservatism that bothers me. And I'm not saying that you're wrong in being conservative. I'm saying you're wrong when you go this route. There's a type of conservative that I've noticed, a type of, and I won't just say conservative, I'll say a type of a delusion.
Okay.
Somebody who becomes so delusional. And I think with Joe McCarthy, I think a lot of it has to do with politics and the way that people reacted. It's very similar to kind of something we're dealing with right now. And I'm trying so hard not to skewer anybody politically, but I'm saying in this instance in the 50s and even before the 50s, we had this gentleman, Joseph McCarthy, who nailed something in a speech during a re-election or an election. And basically, he called out people as communists. Mm-hmm. And after World War II, I can understand where that word would be taboo.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be like if you said, by the way, these other people, there's like 15 of these guys, they're Nazis. And you're like, shit!
Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or Al-Qaeda or ISIS. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was trying to think of
those
other
guys
one.
Over there. They like hummus,
which is actually delicious.
Fucking awesome.
Them goddamn hipsters.
Yeah, but what I'm like saying,
chili oil over there
and feet.
I've had conservative views and liberal views and moderate views and centrist views my whole life.
Yeah, I
don't fall in a certain thing, and I want you guys to understand that this isn't about skewering this, but this man took a leap of faith because it made him more popular in my mind. And
what politics feels like sometimes, like just a, it's a popularity. It's no it different is. Than running for office when you're in high school.
Indeed. I agree.
You had to be tall, good looking.
Yeah. I mean, there was that. But then, I mean, when you go with McCarthy and Nixon, who are probably our two biggest conservative, I would say, failures as far as the 20th century, there is an interesting story to behold. So let's get to it. Let's suss this one out. Let's get down and kind of figure out where he started, how he began, and how this whole hearing kind of came into fruition. So,
sure. Okay. So he was born in 1908 on a farm in the town of Grand Chute in Outagamie.
Sure.
Grand Chute.
Yes. In Wisconsin. He was the fifth of seven children. His mother, Bridget, was from County Tipperary, Ireland, and his dad was born in the United States. They had met after she immigrated. Now, McCarthy dropped out of junior high at age 14 so he could help his parents manage their farm.
That's normal back then.
Yep. He went back to school in Manawa, Wisconsin, when he was 20 and graduated in only 1 year. So already we can tell, like, he's a smart dude.
Yeah.
He knows what he's talking about. He attended Marquette University from 1930 to 1935.
Oh, yeah. I mastered in ranch.
That's what I would master in.
With a minor in
cheese curds.
That was freaky.
That was. Oh, my God.
I'm surprised you didn't go for the low fruit and say a master in baiting.
No.
I leave the low fruit for you, my friend.
Yes.
Hey, this isn't the Dong Wrangler episode, yes. Okay?
This is serious. Okay, now when McCarthy first started in college, he studied electrical engineering and then decided he would switch his major to law. He was admitted to the bar in 1935 after his time at Marquette.
He worked at the bar.
He worked at a law firm in Shawano, Wisconsin. Wisconsin has some great city names.
Yeah.
They're very native.
They yeah, are. I know a lot of them are here in Michigan, too. But like when you read them, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shawano, Wisconsin.
You just want Josh to respond to you in Indian.
Yes.
It is time for us
I am chief of Shawano.
It is time for the Austin Powers blowjob.
Gobbles on knob.
That flows like the peaceful river over waterfall.
His cum flows like the river.
The fans like that.
Weren't we just saying 20 minutes ago when we were outside that there wouldn't be any, like,
cum
jokes?
Hijinks or anything? But yeah.
That didn't work. That's okay. It's okay. I like it. Everyone else likes it. So, okay, he worked at a law firm in Shawano, Wisconsin, and launched an unsuccessful campaign for district attorney as a Democrat in 1936.
Whoa, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yes.
So he went the other way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he originally ran as a Democrat. Yep.
He went both ways.
He's a man with options. He's ready. Mm-hmm. Ready for it? Bipartisan.
I'm buying lots of things, but partisan isn't one of them.
Oh, God. That
one fucking love that.
That one fell in my lap like gold. Okay, so at his years working at the law firm, he made money on the side by gambling. He's a gambler.
I'm gambling.
Yep. Well, wasn't he
legal here now?
Big drinker, too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, that's the main...
Was it
Bush?
Oh, right.
That was from my childhood. When they'd open up the can of Bud, they go, Bush.
I remember Budweiser frogs, but that's about it.
I remember because I was in elementary school and everyone just made fun of it and said, butt wipe er. Because nice. That's what you do when you're 10 years old. Right?
Oh, of course.
All right. So, in 1939, McCarthy had more success when he ran for the nonpartisan elected post of 10th District Circuit Court Judge. And with this win, he actually became the youngest circuit judge in the state's history.
That's impressive.
Wow. It is. Yeah. So his judicial career attracted some controversy because of the speed with which he dispatched many of his cases as he worked to clear the heavily backlogged docket he had inherited from the previous judge. Previous judge sucked.
Clearly. So,
and he left him with like a whole desk full of shit that he had to work through.
He's probably one of those judges who's like, I'm on the outs. I don't give a shit anymore.
Whatever. Do guilty. What you want.
Fucking guilty. Guilty. Yep.
CCA judges.
So,
damn sub judges.
Oh my God.
Now, leave the mess for the regular.
We got the casual judge. Right. He left his microphone on while he went into the bathroom and started fucking ripping him.
Oh God.
True story. Look
odor in the court.
Look that up on YouTube. Yes. It's actually more like real.
Odor in the court.
Odor in the court. That's what I said.
You two might have just stepped on each other's toes.
Mm-hmm. No, no, he said it first. I thought he said order. I was like,
I'm just saying, not only I step on it.
Did you step on anybody's toes last episode?
A lot.
Don't worry about it. It's a conversation.
Yes.
That's true. I felt bad when I listened to it, though. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, literally, like, he slapped a teacher. And then, like, and then to the
next line,
I know.
He slapped a teacher.
Yeah, I'm just like. And then Josh, man.
No, don't worry about it. It's a conversation.
Josh was like one more interruption short of telling you to shut the fuck up.
And then he'll ask, why doesn't anybody speak on my segment?
I'm going to get some bologna and slap Ryan with it if he does that.
That's okay.
It's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine.
You can't simultaneously ask for people to talk during your segment and then yell at them when they talk during your segment.
True. I'm going to slap you with the bologna, too.
We don't have any bologna.
He's fine.
No, we don't.
Bluff call.
That's bologna.
I guess we have dignity around here and don't buy crappy meat.
No, only the coldest of cuts.
That's right. Anyway, Wisconsin had strict divorce laws, but when McCarthy,
You're totally fine.
When McCarthy heard divorce cases, he actually expedited them whenever possible and made the needs of the children involved in contested divorces a priority. Spoiler alert, this is going to be like one of the only nice thing he does in his entire life.
Yeah, I was saying, which is great. He's been doing a pretty good job. Right.
When it came to other cases argued before him, McCarthy compensated for his lack of experience as a jurist by demanding and relying heavily upon precise briefs from contesting attorneys. So he like kind of let them do all the footwork. Now, the Wisconsin Supreme Court reversed a very low percentage of the cases he heard, but he was also censured in 1941 for having lost evidence in price fixing cases.
Oops.
Ooh. Yeah, that was a big oopsie.
How do you? Okay.
Yeah. Again, I think, like you mentioned, I think he's trying to rush these.
Yeah, he was. Well, and he had no experience in as a judge. He kind of was just making shit up as he went.
I think he was waiting for the next.
Oh, for sure. Now, again, here's another instance of him. Like, McCarthy really liked to make himself appear a lot better than he was. And here's an instance of that. Okay. So in 1942, shortly after the U.S. entered World War II, he enlisted into the Marine Corps, despite the fact that his position in office exempted him from military service. So he didn't have to join, but he joined anyway.
Okay.
Now, his college education qualified him for a direct commission, and he entered the Marines as a first lieutenant.
Which is badass.
Right. He served as an intelligence briefing officer for a dive bomber squadron, and that sounds so cool, in the Solomon Islands.
Everything you just said maybe just gave me a high school boner.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
Speaking of.
So, he served in the Solomon Islands for 30 months, and he held the rank of captain by the time he resigned his commission in April of 1945.
Like, I think that's... Don't quote me on this, but this might be like three steps above a first lieutenant. So that's pretty fucking epic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's up there with Captain Crunch and Captain Kangaroo. And
Captain Hook.
Captain Picard. Captain
Picard.
Yep.
Captain Morgan.
Captain Morgan. Morgan.
Too. Yes.
Captain Crunch. My favorite captain.
My favorite captain, too. Kirk. Yep. Mm-hmm. So he volunteered.
I already said Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just fucking.
Oh my God.
He said the good Star Trek. Again, Larry underscore Gov underscore Gov.
Yep, right. There you go.
That's where your problem is.
Next Generation is the greatest Star Trek of all time. God damn it.
There is no good Star Trek.
Oh, it's true.
Well, zero stars. Hate Star Trek.
Okay, since we're on Star Trek, you're Lucy fan.
Yes.
You know about her work with Star Trek?
Yes, actually, I was just telling Josh about that. What was that? A couple of weeks ago, that if there was no Lucy or Desilu Productions, there would be no Star Trek. Yeah, she was the one that championed. Money. Yeah, she championed for Star Trek. She was like, "No, this is going to be a great show. Make it happen." She pushed for it to be on air.
Took her money, made the first pilot, got shot down. Took more money, made a second pilot. That worked. She was produced the whole first season. Mm-hmm. It did poorly. She sold it to Paramount. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and then like the next season did poorly, you know, because it didn't really gain traction until like reruns, I think. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And she held on to that.
I know. I mean, I think she had made enough money at that point that more was not going to change her life.
That Desilu Productions has like a hit list. I was surprised. Like a lot of the stuff they did. Well,
Desilu Productions was the first production company to use multi-camera shots in TV. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because I Love Lucy was one of the very first shows to use more than one camera to shoot from different angles. Desi Arnaz came up with that idea himself.
Okay. Mm. I love Star Trek, by the way. I just want to say, I personally love Star Trek. Yes.
I do too.
You went from George Takei to like the Count from Sesame Street real quick there.
I was about to say Sulu. Enter my quarters.
Oh my god. Okay.
Our watch has ended. Enter my quarters.
I'll enter your quarters.
I'm Captain Red Dad.
Oh lord.
I'll dock into you.
Oh my god. So back to McCarthy.
Yeah. No dick jokes this episode.
No, none at all. Held the rank of captain by the time he resigned. We talked about that. He volunteered to fly 12 combat missions as a gunner observer, acquiring the nickname Tail Gunner Joe, which in hindsight, people are like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he gave himself that nickname. Yeah, right. He remained in the Marine Corps Reserve after the war, so he eventually attained the rank of major.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's a huge, that's a quick growth for an officer.
Mm-hmm. That's up there with Major Payne and Lee Majors. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball.
It's a great movie.
This is where we start to go downhill with Mr. McCarthy here. He would later falsely claim that he participated in 32 aerial missions in order to qualify for a distinguished Flying Cross and multiple awards of the Air Medal, which the Marine Corps chain of command decided to approve in 1952 because of his political influence.
Oh my god.
They let him get away with it because he was famous.
That is unlike the military.
So he lied himself into an award,
basically. He lied himself into multiple awards. And it doesn't end there.
I got a couple of awards while I was in, which seems silly for me to even mention.
I'm curious. I want to know.
I feel like Josh looked at me like, shut the fuck up.
Josh is like, what'd you get a platinum in?
I don't see a Purple Heart. That's the only one that matters, right?
So I got a NAM for serving in Guantanamo.
Yep.
And then I also got a NATO medal for serving in the NATO region when I was in Iceland and all.
Very cool. I think my dad, when he was in the Marine Corps, got his sharpshooter medal.
I have that too. Yeah.
Because he was, I guess, really good
at it. Notice he didn't get a medal for showing up on time.
I think that's because they expect that when you're in the Navy.
A cold Russian shit turd.
A purple clock.
A purple clock to make sure that I show up on time.
Like the one Flav wears.
Yes.
Just hang that over his naval uniform.
You fucking loose semen. Show up on time, you doof. Here's a clock to put around.
Oh my god. Okay, so yes, he lied about a bunch of shit. He also publicized a letter of commendation, which he said had been signed by his commanding officer, Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, Chief of Naval Operations. his commander, revealed that McCarthy had written the letter himself, probably while preparing award citations and commendation letters as an additional duty. So it was his job to write up the letters, and he just handed them to his boss, and his boss signed his name. So McCarthy wrote himself a letter and gave it to his boss because his boss didn't check who they were being delivered to.
This is where
I figured out a way to get some days off at work.
Well, this is also where I start to wonder what went wrong.
Mm-hmm. He's clearly a what's the word for someone who lies?
Narcissist?
A politician?
A liar. Yeah,
there's a more technical term.
Right.
Pathological liar.
Yeah.
A liar.
Yep. Well, I think what's weird is before this, he seems fine. It's this time in service. This is World War II.
Yeah. Right. It's immediately following World War II.
So Korean War.
No,
Korean War would be the mid-50s.
Korean War was the war that happens during the
year. Right. No, he served during World War II. And it's immediately following his
service.
Yeah. After he finishes his service in World War II. And that's when he starts like laying claim to some bullshit. Yeah.
Which I wonder is that some sort of weird trigger for some like PTSD or lying?
See, but here's the thing. When he served, he was a briefing officer. He didn't like
he was
a desk jockey. He didn't see action.
Good morning. By the way,
thank you, desk jockeys, for your service as well.
Yeah, for sure. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that I don't know.
But he didn't see action as
right.
Ultimately,
which is a common serial killer trait too. Mm-hmm. A lot of the serial killers, like when we cover Leonard Lake and Charles Ng, they were supposedly in Vietnam, but they were like literally like radio men back in like they were like. Like, okay, the war's in Vietnam, but you're stationed in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Like, my uncle was stationed in Hawaii during Vietnam.
Right.
That's where he did his service.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some would say that my hazardous duty was kind of silly because I was stationed in Guantanamo Bay, but everybody else was in Iraq or Afghanistan. So that I get that sometimes there's like a...
Is it a feeling of inadequacy that you're not...
I mean, for
these serial killers,
I think they try to inflate things as if those they lie about, because you can look at a guy's military history based on his file and be able to tell right away, like, oh, you were stationed here, here, and here. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking to somebody who is also subscribed to Soldier of Fortune and also, you know, sitting at a bar drinking many a Coors Light or Pilsner, you can look at them and you can be like, hey, I served in Iraq. I did. And you can build a false narrative,
right,
which
for
is what he's doing.
Is would you call that a form of stolen valor?
Yes. This is a quintessential version of stolen valor. He's doing this because he knows that it's going to make him look good.
Mm-hmm. And he must, I wonder if this is because he had I'm going to be a politician.
Yes. This. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean to completely keep throwing you off,
really,
but Forrest Gump has one of the greatest points in it where Lieutenant Dan is constantly talking about like, I'm supposed to die in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys have romanticized visions in their head of like, I'm in World War III or II or Vietnam and I fight the enemy. I kill a bunch of them. And then at the last second I die and I win this award for my family for this big thing to carry on, this legacy of this person.
Right.
And for this guy, you know, obviously he didn't see anything like that.
No. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me mad because I sent you guys that article of my grandfather like shooting down four Nazi planes
before
getting bombed, and then goes to the hospital, and then they bomb the hospital he's at. And it's like, he would not speak. I would not know that if I had my dad not found that article, because he just didn't talk about
that.
And here's this guy.
I feel like purposely lying about it. It's very backwards in the way that like the guys who earned it don't talk about it.
No.
And the guys who didn't earn it try and make it seem inflated. Like they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's why I vividly remember going out with my dad for one of the Veterans Day meals. Mm-hmm. And he had brought his card from the service because he was like, well, how are they going to know I was military? Mm-hmm. And when he asked the waitress there that, she was like, no, because the fact that you're even asking me if you want to see my ID proves that you were a serviceman.
He served in the first Gulf War?
He didn't see action either.
He didn't see, but he did.
Yeah, he was stationed in Okinawa.
Okay.
But yeah, it's that sort of thing that, like, they know. Right. I don't know.
It's just so weird. Like you said, like the ones that serve don't talk, and this guy's signing letters. And
you have to get a SEAL or a Green Beret. I mean, I met them both. You have to get them real drunk before they even talk about any sort of action.
Yep.
And the one buddy I had that I was the closest to, who was a SEAL, and I finally was like, I broached it to him. We were three sheets of the wind, just like,
no.
And I'm just like, man, did you really kill someone? And he's like, yeah. Oof. That was the most. It wasn't like, yeah, by the way, it was, you know, this, and I remember, it was
just like Call of Duty.
Yeah, it was not.
No.
Yeah, that's got to affect a person.
Yeah, it would affect me. I don't think I would be able to live in the kind of state of, like, home, love, girls, you know, girlfriend, life, pod family, in the right way. If I knew that I had ended somebody's life, I'm too empathetic.
And I've heard that a bunch. And it's like, they are like, I know that it was either me or them, but I still can't.
Right.
Handle that. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sorry to bring the show down.
Dicks, farts, pussy.
Well, hey, if you thought that was the last of McCarthy being a shitty human being, you'd be wrong. Because a quote-unquote war wound, he broke his leg. His war wound that McCarthy made the subject of plenty of stories involving airplane crashes or anti-aircraft fire had in fact happened aboard ship during a celebration for sailors crossing the equator for the first time. He got fucking litty titty, tripped, and broke his leg, and then told everyone that he was like, oh, I was in an airplane crash. It was on fire. You should have seen me dragging 8 guys out on my shoulders, stacked up.
That's a thing to celebrate, crossing the equator.
Apparently. You
know, given the fact that I know I also went through this stuff, too, and knowing that all of his future lies, this just makes so much sense now.
Yeah. So, because of his various lies about his military heroism, his nickname was often sarcastically used to make fun of him by his critics. Now, he campaigned for the Republican Senate nomination in Wisconsin while still on active duty in 1944, but was defeated by the incumbent. After he left the Marines 5 months before the end of the Pacific War in September of 1945, he was reelected unopposed to his circuit court position, so he was back being a judge. He then began a much more systematic and detailed campaign for the 1946 Republican Senate primary nomination against Robert M. La Follette, Jr. Now, in his campaign, he attacked La Follette for not enlisting during the war, although Follette was 46 when Pearl Harbor was bombed.
They probably wouldn't have even taken him.
No.
I don't know what the cutoff is, but I'm sure I've passed it.
I think it's 35.
It's 35, okay. I'm pretty sure. Now, McCarthy also claimed that La Follette had made huge profits from investments he had made during the war. The truth was, however, that McCarthy made a profit of over $42,000. That's $631,014 in 2020 money in 1943 alone. So the first year he made over $600,000.
Isn't it
from stock market investments he had made just before he enlisted? Where he got the money to invest is a mystery that nobody knows.
A regular Warren Buffett, I see here.
You know, a lot of times, people, when they accuse you of something, it's something they do themselves.
Now, La Follette had made money. He had partial interest in a radio station, which earned him a profit of $47,000 over the course of like 3 or 4 years.
McCarthy in the morning.
So he did make money, but it's like a small lump of cash as compared to the money that he made, that McCarthy made in the 1 year.
Kind of like an Epstein's type. thing.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, his campaign funds were 10 times more than La Follette's.
Holy
yes.
shit.
The suggestion that La Follette had been war profiteering was extremely damaging, and McCarthy won the primary nomination by over 5,000 votes.
Wow. Well, that's just another example of you can take something and make people believe it right. and run with it.
Now, it was during this campaign that he started publicizing his wartime nickname, Tail Gunner Joe, using the slogan, Congress needs a tail gunner. He was elected to his first term in the Senate. Though? Do they?
Do they?
Do they?
Tail gunner? Don't
tail
you?
Gunner?
No. I mean, don't you need to leave your desk to be a tail gunner?
Right? Politics are pretty boring and a lot right. of like... Should we give these people another stimulus check? Probably not, because they're all just sitting at home and they're making too much money on unemployment. So fuck them.
Yep.
My nickname is Paper Signer Joe. Nope, that won't stick.
My name is Letter Opener Lenny.
Nope, that won't work. Let me think.
My name is Signature Falsifier Sam.
My name is... dribbles when he pees. No, that's not good.
And I'll tell you what, Signature Falsifier Sam is there for sure.
I'm Breakfast Maker Donnie.
I would vote for him before I vote for one, because he wasn't alliterating his letters there.
Yep.
Yeah. And I appreciate a good breakfast sandwich.
Amen. True. If you can make me a breakfast burrito, we can be friends.
Right.
A little sausage, a little cheddar on a...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some peppers. Yeah.
Peppers and onions.
I, being the good subservient wife that I am, made Joshua two bagel, egg, cheese, and sausage breakfast sandwiches to eat while he watched the PlayStation thing today.
Wow, that...
I even let him eat it in the living room so he could watch his TV.
I never eat in the living room, so...
That might be the laziest thing I've ever heard.
Excuse me, I'm going to sit at the computer. I need some fuel.
Well, hold on a second. I came home from work.
That was the first he had eaten today.
I had eaten the shit out of him, too. And I steam cleaned the house.
You did.
I wish. Oh, they were fucking rad.
I so don't mean to toot my own horn, but I am the master
don't worry, I'll toot it for you.
Of breakfast sandwiches. It is my gift. It is my gift, and I make them for him often. It's like his favorite thing that I make.
Josh, you may be the luckiest man in podcasting.
I wouldn't disagree.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay, last little bit, I promise. So, okay, he was elected to his first term in Senate with support from the communist-controlled United Electrical Radio what? And Machine Workers, who preferred McCarthy to the anti-communist La Follette. In the general election against Democrat Howard J.
You can't make this shit up.
That's insane.
In the general election against Democrat Howard J. McMurray, he won 61.2% to 37.3% and joined Senator Wiley in the Senate, who he had challenged unsuccessfully 2 years earlier.
Damn. Just spiked that volleyball on that.
Wilson!
What's our time at?
I get that.
43 minutes.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of the fun-loving Mr. McCarthy that you will know and probably not be happy with.
aged banana.
This is that. That's a Josh song.
What?
Go to boscoshoop.bandcamp.com and get the album.
We're promoting our boy.
I actually took your idea too. So it's not just like Bosco, like Bosco sticks words, but it's Boss.
Bosco. Ah, nice.
So the Army/McCarthy hearings were a series of hearings held by United States Senate Subcommittee on Investigations from April through June 1954 to investigate conflicting accusations between the United States Army and U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy. Now, as I mentioned, he had a speech where he said verbatim to the crowd, "I have 15 people that I know that are involved in government."
I just want to. You still have a clip, right? And it's about what he's talking about.
No, this is from his McCarthy's last big trial thing.
Okay, do we want? Well, I think we should. You're going to play that when we get there.
When I get to that point, yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Anyway, so they were investigating the conflicting accusations between the U.S. Army and U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy. The Army accused Chief Committee Counsel Roy Cohn of pressuring the Army to give preferential treatment to G. David Shine, a former McCarthy aide and friend of Cohn's. Hmm. McCarthy countercharged that this accusation was made in bad faith in retaliation for his recent aggressive investigations of suspected communists and security risks in the Army. So, yeah. Chaired by Senator Carl Munt, the hearings...
I'm Munt. Happy Munt Day.
The hearings convened on March 16th, 1954, and received...
That's such a munt. Oh, you don't want to eat that ice cream. It's got some munt in the corner.
Ew.
Scrape the munt off before you serve that.
You gotta check the expiration date, bait. Babe. Bait?
Bait.
There's a lot of munt on that.
Yeah. His girlfriend's a fisher woman. So
that's true.
Called her bait, for short.
So there was gavel-to-gavel live television coverage on ABC and DuMont from April 22nd to June 17th. The media coverage, particularly television, greatly contributed to McCarthy's decline in popularity and his eventual censure by the Senate the following December.
I was like, man, I should ask my dad about this. He'd only been six at the time, so... Mm.
Right. No, my dad would have been three.
Yeah.
So he was like,
what year was this? 54. My dad was negative 10.
I was six. Also, my dad and I were the same age. Out of every number to pull, I just pulled the same number. I don't know why.
Okay.
The Senate decided that these conflicting charges should be investigated, and the appropriate committee to do this was the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, usually chaired by McCarthy. Since McCarthy was one of the targets of the hearing, Senator Carl Munt, of Republican from South Dakota, was reluctantly appointed to replace McCarthy as chairman of the subcommittee. John G. Adams was the Army counsel. Acting as special counsel was Joseph Welch of the Boston law firm of Hale and Dorr, now called WilmerHale. The hearings were broadcast nationally on ABC and DuMont Networks and in part by NBC. Francis Newton Littlejohn, the news director at ABC, made the decision to cover the hearings live gavel to gavel. The televised hearings lasted for 36 days, and an estimated 80 million people saw at least part of the hearings. That's staggering.
Yeah, no kidding.
People, especially back then.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say this. This was a housewife show, too. I mean, this was like before The Juice, before, you know, Satan and Juice definitely come up on this show a lot, but this was like their fun time, happy dance, I guess. This would have been when they made cornbread muffins and just sat there while their
TV kid was fairly new at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean,
we covered that in one of the time capsules that mm-hmm. like TV was like How to Swim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but like, I'm sure you could have listened to this on the radio too.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a lot of information through the radio, even now to this day. Check out Beer City Media Podcast. So anyway, there while the hearings went on, a photograph of Shine was introduced, and Joseph Walsh accused Cohn of doctoring the image to show Shine alone with Army Secretary Robert T. Stevens. On the witness stand, Cohn and Shine both insisted that the picture entered into evidence, Shine and Stevens alone, was requested by Stevens and that no one was edited out of the photograph. Walsh then produced a wider shot of Stevens and Shine with McGuire AFB wing commander Colonel Jack Bradley standing to Shine's right.
AFB is Air Force Base?
Yes. Which is one of the places I was stationed at.
Nice.
It was fun. They had better choices when it came to the mechanical candy machines that I put money into.
Interesting.
You could find a Take Five and a Kit Kat.
Is that your favorite machine at the gym? The vending?
No, usually mine is the Gatorade machine because I need fucking electrolytes like post-haste on the double.
And some beef jerky.
Dude, a Gatorade and beef jerky machine might just be the most genius thing you have for hangover.
For soldiers, I didn't
say hangover, but okay. So, according to Hoover, after the photograph was discredited, McCarthy produced a copy of a confidential letter he claimed was a January 26, 1951 memo written and sent by FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, who seems like a bad guy in all the episodes we ever covered.
Yeah.
To Major General Alexander R. Bowling. Now, Hoover, he didn't like Bonnie and Clyde. He didn't like these lawless individuals. And I think he jumped on Joseph McCarthy's thing with this. Like, I think he got excited about the idea that, like, yeah, they don't like America. So I'm going to shit in their mouth with heels on, and then I'll stomp their balls out.
Wow.
So
you've just nailed Josh's kink.
Warning Army intelligence of subversives in the Army Signal Corps, McCarthy claimed the letter was in the Army files when Stevens became secretary in 1953, and that Stevens willfully ignored it. Robert Collier, not of our Patreon.
We don't know. Maybe they're related.
Was this your grandpa?
If they are, it's probably pronounced Collier.
That's true. Thank you, April. Assistant to Ray Jenkins read a letter from Attorney General Herbert Brownell Jr. in which he stated that Hoover examined the document and that he neither wrote nor ordered the letter and that no such copy existed in FBI files, rendering McCarthy's claims meritless and the letter was bullshit. Now, I'm not going to read this next segment because I listened to the hearings. I know what they're going to talk about.
Okay. Oh boy.
Adjust chair.
Scratch arms.
Get the wigglies out. Scratch your nose.
So, one of the most offensive points of the hearings to me was a point where they mentioned that they mentioned to somebody was on the stand. And I don't think it was I think this happened naturally, which is what bothered me when I listened to it. It wasn't just like it wasn't a point. Mm-hmm. It was just something that happened naturally again. So basically, they're grilling somebody about communism, whatever. He's not a communist. Fuck you. And he says something about, did you see any sort of homosexuality? And he says, no. But he heard a rumor about how in a southern region like Hawaii or something like that, there were gay officers who were together. As soon as that happens, he kind of extrapolates that, like, but we're not okay with this. This is 1954. Mm-hmm. And then there is this domino effect where all these senators in this hearing are like, that's not okay in Tennessee either. That's not okay in Arkansas. That's not okay. And is it okay for me to say South Dakota or not okay? And was like, they're all shooting down homosexuality. Mm-hmm. For
to prove their straightness.
Right. And it made me so upset listening to that. Cause it was like, that was the most blatant disregard to people's sexuality. Now I've always
people brave enough to serve.
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's so upsetting because this is 65 years ago, and I'm listening to senators say how upset they would be if anybody was gay in the service or gay in general. Like, we don't like gays, basically, was mm-hmm. what I came by. And it look, I have friends that are gay. Mm-hmm. And I love them dearly. Everybody here does, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And it was so upsetting. I mean, you know, we've been doing the show for 207 episodes. And
boy, have we.
It really bothers me that these are the moments that... Okay, so let me explain something to our fans and friends, and I feel like we all share the same sentiment. Your sexuality doesn't matter to any one of us on this show.
No.
Or in Beer City Media. Beer City Media does not care where you swing. We love you. If I was gay, I'd be as open and hopefully as free as you guys feel right now being yourself. And
we'd be no different, just mm-hmm. We'd just have a different...
You'd have a different leader.
Yeah, Ryan would have been...
I might just...
boyfriend number whatever by now.
57. Yeah. But it's fine, because you know what? I'm not, but I love you guys for fighting the good fight. And it bothered me. That was a big moment of bothersome...
That's how long the fight for human rights...
Yeah, if anyone, that's why I hate it when people are like, I don't understand why they have to have Pride Month. Like, this is why.
Yeah. You have your Irish Pride Parade. Why can't?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
what's the difference? Mm-hmm. I can tell you what the difference is. The gay Pride Parade is way more fun.
Exactly.
The thing that bothers me too, yeah, I mean, you bring up the Irish thing, like, how many people go down to those and are not Irish at all?
Trust me.
Right?
I'm on the west side of Grand Rapids, since it's the Polish,
yep,
you know, the Polish side, they have the Polish,
Pulaski days.
Pulaski days, and all it is a race to see who can puke in the bushes.
There's a lot of, like, beer and cabbage when I went to Pulaski days. That's all I really gathered.
And sausage.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And dough filled with potatoes. Hey, let's take this carb and fill it with more carbs. Okay.
Yes. So yeah,
genius,
I think
genius.
I think the point that you're trying to make is, like, we don't care which way you swing.
Yeah.
No. As long as you swing yourself over to the Patreon and subscribe.
I would say that's genius, but also don't do it if you don't need to. I mean, if you have if you're in a rough spot, I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. No.
Obviously. And or if you're just like just getting into us and you need to see us out.
But
we've got 207 episodes.
It's the cost of a coffee.
That's true.
God, Ryan would make the worst car salesman.
Yeah, I know.
You don't have to buy this car. You can jam your family into something much smaller.
Yeah.
Here's a PT Cruiser for your six-person family
to be a car dealer.
Yeah.
Well, it's not true. That I'm saying that car dealers are crooked.
No, no.
Join the Patreon, car dealers.
We know you guys have money.
In what played out to be the most dramatic exchange of the hearings, McCarthy responded to aggressive questioning from Army Counsel Joseph Welch on June 9th, 1954, day 30 of the hearings. Welch challenged Cohn to give McCarthy's list of 130 subversives and defense plants to the office of the FBI and the Department of Defense, quote, before the sun goes down, unquote. In response to Welch's challenge, McCarthy suggested that Welch should check on Fred Fisher, a young lawyer. And let me say this. Good. He broke the agreement there.
Mm-hmm.
Because technically they weren't supposed to bring this character up because it was such an issue. And they had already sussed the details out. So he threw this out there basically to make the American people feel happy about why they did this. You want to do it now?
Oh, yes. This is perfect.
All right. So play the clip, sir.
Mr. Welch, sir, with great respect, I work for the committee here. They know how we go about handling situations of communist infiltration and failure to act on FBI information about communist infiltration.
And may I add my small voice, sir, and say whenever you know about a subversive or a communist or a spy, please hurry. Will you remember those words?
In view of Mr. Welch's request, I think we should tell him that he has in his law firm a young man named Fisher, who has been for a number of years a member of an organization which was named, years and years ago, as the legal bulwark of the Communist Party. And I have hesitated bringing that up, but I have been rather bored with your phony request to Mr. Cohn here.
Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is true he is still with Hehlendorf. It is true that he will continue to be with Hehlendorf. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you.
I want to say, Mr. Welch, that it has been labeled long before he became a member, as early as 1944.
Senator, drop this. I did you, I think, no personal injury, Mr. Cohn.
No, sir.
And if I did, I beg your pardon. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator.
Right, well, let's
You've let's, done enough. Have right. you no sense of decency, sir, at long last? Have you left no sense of decency?
No sense of decency! True story.
A lot of anger in that courtroom. And yeah, you can find the video of this online. Like, so I actually see his assistant, like, just... He just goes white, and then because you could tell, like he's screwed.
Mm-hmm. Post that.
Okay, I'd have to find it again.
No, I have the clip. I have it liked and saved. I'll post it on the Facebook group.
Excellent.
Ooh, that's a big moment. I think that's one of the most pivotal moments in not just politics, but also just like
American history.
Yes. I think it's so important for you guys to see somebody actually realize realize their faults.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to fuck up.
Yeah.
But more often than not, we're challenged to just push through.
I saw a tweet from Mike Tyson today.
I saw that you retweeted it.
And I retweeted it, because I love it. He's like, you get knocked down 100 times, you get up 100 times, you learn 100 lessons.
Yeah. So Joseph McCarthy was done after this. I feel like I could read a bunch more stuff, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's kind of, I mean, we're not like hardcore history. We can't really do a big sauce.
No, that would require a seriousness.
His breath smelled like garlic and plastic.
Whiskey.
Yeah, whiskey. Well, yeah, definitely whiskey. That clip alone sums up this whole thing. It really, to me, it was the moment during the research, during listening to all the clips of the McCarthy. It was like a 3.5 hour thing I listened to, which I do happily because I love learning this stuff. Mm-hmm. But that was the moment that I cried. And it was not music. There was, that's more, I sent you guys a clip of that.
Oh, but I thought maybe they had like a band in them.
No. I'm just playing slowly.
A celloist.
But it was the summation of a man having to go through hell on the national, I wouldn't say national, but international stage. I mean, he was videotaped in front of everybody and like, just listening to this man not give up until the very last minute, until finally one of his cohorts says, have you no dignity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, leave this man alone.
Have you no sense of decency, sir?
I think what makes me the most emotive to that is that finally somebody is speaking for... Sign it.
And, friendly fire.
And I'm not saying Ray Cohn was like an he didn't have great things in his life. He wasn't just like a lower, super lower class person, but still he was a serviceman. And it's upsetting to me to watch Congress interrogate him about him being a communist. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what I mean? It'd be like if I pulled you aside and I'm like, are you a Nazi? No, but really.
Right. Like, you've already decided.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've already decided that you are what I want you to be, mm-hmm. but you're not that. But I'm going to push you on that for 30 days.
Well, and I think McCarthy had a way. I mean, because think of all the lies that he told in his, like, early on in his career, just for notoriety's sake. You know, he had a way of making people believe things that were not true. That was like his gift,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's not surprising that he was, you know, for him to say, look, this guy is a commie. And people are like, oh, okay.
There is a certain thing to people who can communicate well mm-hmm. that you just assume they're telling the truth.
Right. For sure.
I mean, that's why you know, the political talk.
Mm-hmm.
Radio, I think, is very divisive in that way because
everyone listens to me.
You just have to make it sound like you're telling the truth.
Right.
Or at the very least, convince people that you believe that what you're saying is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a better way of putting it.
And honestly, how often do they believe that what they're saying is the truth?
It's hard to tell.
It really is.
Is it? Because they're trying to push an agenda? Is it because mm-hmm. they're trying to sell ads?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
is it because that's what they're being told to say?
That's a scary thing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially like the news media, because you can look at now and how many people honestly go on like your Fox News and put the president up on this huge pedestal, but you know that not every single one of them's like, no, we are really, we believe all of this. Mm-hmm. Their boss is going to tell them that this is on the teleprompter. Mm-hmm. You have to say it. Mm-hmm.
And I also think a big thing is nowadays is that we now have news and then you have the opinion people.
And it's accepted that the opinion people are news. They like somehow they fall under the same umbrella.
Well, and even it's very hard to tell the difference between the two. Like there are so many
the same.
Yeah, they are presented the same way. And it's hard to sort of sift through what's real and what's not.
If you watch Fox News when it's the actual journalists, it's way different than their opinion people.
Yeah.
Like there's still, you know, like the Brett Humes and the Chris Wallace, I think is like they.
I don't mind Chris Wallace.
No, they're actual journalists.
Right.
And they present it as news. And then like the Sean Hannity's or the Rachel Maddow's.
Mm-hmm.
Throw some lefties in there because
I don't want
people jumping.
Yeah, no, but I agree.
That's opinion as much, not as, you know, as opposed to the news.
And I like Bill Maher personally.
Well, and he's not news.
No, he's real time.
It's opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
and there's nothing wrong.
I was going to say, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with hearing other opinions. But instead of taking that as fact, because there is a difference between opinion and news, you got to look at those opinions, especially those of the other side, and maybe think about what they have to say, because that might change how you feel. But the news is the news.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure someone's out there like, they're bought out by the media. They're going to give that false information. There's
a little shred of truth there because I think we'd have to dive deep and look into it. There was a time when it was just accepted that your news was going to lose money. Like that was just a cost of business.
Right.
And now it's become a moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
People crow about their ratings as a news organization. It's that's not the point.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a service to the citizens of the United States.
Yeah. Well, the news is important, especially again, looking at all sides, whether they be right leaning, left leaning, or any kind of leaning, because the way I look at it is the news is going to be factual to some degree. It's going to be honest because it's honest to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might not be 100%. It might only be 40% true in the bigger picture, but that's why it's important to look at everything and use your brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Figure out I think that, this obviously did happen. And it's probably because of so-and-so. It doesn't matter, but you got to use critical thinking and listen to all sides.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I agree. I, you know, with this one, I find that. So when that speech ends, he leaves and he's dead 3 years later from alcoholism. So after this whole thing ends, basically he walks away from this. I mean, he lost. And it's plain to see. I mean, you can't just chase people around and just be like, you're the fox with the you try to pretend like you're a duckling, but you're actually really a fox.
He turned a word into a weapon. Like you're a communist.
Poof. Right.
You're a communist. Poof.
Right. Poof. Yes.
What? You looked at me crooked. You're a communist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You lean a little too left, which was the big thing. I mean, it was anybody in Hollywood
that. I would think the list would be pretty interesting to read.
I'll pull it up quick on that.
OK.
And honestly, again, we are seeing that today. How often do you go on Facebook or Twitter to a local news message board and you see people like, you're a fascist? You're a communist. You're a socialist. Antifa. People throw that stuff around left and right now. They don't care.
It's because you would actually have to take time to learn what a person is.
Well,
and so it's easier to just label them and then you don't have to worry about learning who they are as a person.
I'd be curious how many people that throw around like, you're a fascist. Like if they know what fascism is. Or what a socialist is.
Yeah. Or they throw socialist and communist. I'm like, well, they're two different things.
Well, yeah. I guess the next time that anybody calls you a fascist or a communist, just ask them what the definition of that is.
First. You're a fascist. No, I'm trying to lose weight.
I am wearing my Pumas today.
Yes.
That's good.
You're fascist, Nista.
Yes. Whatever. We got it.
Yeah.
April. All right.
So a short-ish list of celebrities who are entertainers, rather, who are blacklisted during the Red Scare. Charlie Chaplin was blacklisted for refusing to cooperate when called before the House Un-American Activities Committee. Orson Welles. Welles was a vocal political leftist. He directed Citizen Kane, which some believe supports a communist ideology.
It might be one of the best movies ever made.
Yes.
Charlie Chaplin is like Harrison Ford level. Mm-hmm. You can't. He's Hollywood royalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He made a mustache famous.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
Hitler ran with it.
Oh, I guess. He did. And then Michael Jordan tried to bring it back.
That was a mistake. All right. Next is Burgess Meredith, who was blacklisted and was not in movies for 7 years.
Wow. I love him. He was the Penguin in the original Batman.
Blacklisted for 7 years.
Yep.
Not a communist either. Such bullshit.
Singer, dancer, and actress Lena Horne.
Oh, wow.
Was blacklisted for many years and labeled as a communist sympathizer because of her civil rights activism and connection to Paul Robeson, who was heavily targeted because of his communist affiliations. Oh, I love this one. Langston Hughes, the poet, was affiliated with communist-linked groups. His poetry sometimes appeared in communist newspapers.
Okay.
Arthur Miller was a celebrated playwright, but he refused to name suspected communists when called before the HUAC.
He wrote a play that I was in.
Which play?
Bells on Their Toes.
Oh, I didn't know you acted.
That's a weird place to have balls.
Okay. Next is Pete Seeger. He was an open member of the Communist Party, but refused to name anyone before the HUAC in 1955.
Wow.
He was convicted of contempt of Congress and was sentenced to 10 years, though that was later overturned.
Very influential musician.
Yes. Gypsy Rose Lee was a burlesque star. She attended meetings of the CUF.
They just wanted to see her.
Pretty much. Leonard Bernstein, composer. He was a suspected communist.
Bernstein. He's from the Bernstein.
Yes.
Bears.
Bernstein, yeah. Bears. He was a suspected communist, but was never called to testify. Dorothy Parker. The FBI had a 1,000-page file on the writer. She reported for a communist magazine and was suspected of supporting the party. John Garfield, who was an actor, refused to name anyone. Burl Ives, folk singer and actor. His involvement with labor unions was suspicious, but he denied affiliation with the Communist Party and cooperated with the HUAC.
How much hate unions are hated to this day? Like, oh, it must be communist. Those darn workers want to be eating.
Yeah. Judy Holliday, actress and singer. Uta Hagen was a German actress who was affiliated with Paul Robeson. Artie Shaw, clarinetist and band leader.
He was good.
Dashiell Hammett.
Damn it.
I don't know who that is.
Dashiell O'Neill.
I guess.
Oh, Lloyd, I love her in New Girl.
God, I hate you. Lloyd Bridge, who is an actor. And Lucille Ball.
Mm-hmm. I'll do a quick revision. I said Arthur.
Arthur Fuck?
Sounds like a fun guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the name, like Arthur.
No,
though.
I said Arthur Miller. I was in his play. It was Death of a Salesman.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I said Bells on Their Toes, but that was a completely different thing. Death of a Salesman.
Nice.
That's what I was in.
I was in my fifth grade play called Eiffel Lot and Hoon and Nanny Mary Berry Crunch, and I played the Queen of Grump and Clunkin.
That was a bunch of words.
If I tried to say that,
you would fall.
Would be 17 more pages on his iPad.
It's true.
So what were his final days like?
Well, yeah, after he had this happen where he tried calling out the guy and they're like, yeah, you're a piece of shit. And, you know, the nation saw this happen.
That's a great summation. Yeah. It's so good. It's exactly what I wish I would have said, actually. Now,
well, you know, you can't all be a wordsmith like me. Well, yeah, because of that, he was kind of screwed. He couldn't do anything. So he took to drinking like Ryan. What is going on?
Not like Ryan. No. Do you want me to be dead in three years?
April, okay. This is crazy.
I found another one that was blacklisted that I was really surprised by. Helen Keller was blacklisted.
She never saw it coming.
Never heard them coming either.
Yeah, we think of her as the nearly saint-like woman based on the amazing story of how she learned to communicate despite being blind and deaf. But as an adult, Helen Keller was fairly radical in her political thinking, and the FBI definitely took notice. Although a quote-unquote formal investigation never took place, the FBI did monitor Keller enough to know that she had sent, quote, loving birthday greetings to Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, a prominent communist leader, on her 65th birthday.
All right. Here's the deal. You're listening to this episode, so you're probably getting upset when you're thinking about current things. So listen, they blacklisted Helen Keller.
Right. She couldn't even read the list.
You might as well say, all right, we're blacklisting Big Bird because he's got a little too much sight on Sesame Street.
I mean, he is big, so he can see quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's stupid, though. I mean, one of the stupidest things ever. That actually, what she just said is too dumb to be in a comedy.
For real.
Because you'd literally be like, what are you, what?
I feel like that should be part of a slapstick like film. Like, oh yeah, we got Helen Keller, that rebel.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, she's just trying to put ice in her fucking glass.
What?
I'm saying I saw an ice cube tray over there.
I love lamp.
Well, no, I mean, she's just literally trying to sit right in a chair without falling down.
I don't think vertigo is a problem for her. It was more.
Well, no, I mean. All right. I'm saying,
you know, we're lucky she's not alive. Otherwise, well, she wouldn't be able to hear this anyway.
She wouldn't be offended. Unless we release this in Braille.
Remember Ryan came up with that idea last week?
Yeah. That's true.
Listen to our Braille episode.
Realistically, I'm just saying that she's just trying to be a person without...
You said what about my mom?
You said something again about his mom?
Just did. Yeah. So anyways, you know who's not lovely is this douche canoe.
This guy's final days.
So he took to drinking like Ryan on a good weekend. And quote, he had always been a heavy drinker. And there were times of those seasons of discontent.
Wow, you hammered the cunt on discontent.
Well, he was kind of a cunt, so.
True.
When he drank more than ever. He was not always drunk. He went on the wagon. For him, this meant beer instead of whiskey for days and weeks at a time. The difficulty towards the end was that he couldn't hold the stuff. He went to pieces on his second or third drink. And then he did not snap back quickly.
Mm.
Well, it wasn't just the drinking, though. I mean, that's one thing, and that's already bad if you drink a lot. But he also apparently became addicted to morphine.
Ooh.
Woof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and drinking.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, just having a little smoky joint and a couple of Pabst Blue Ribbons.
This is forgetting life is what he's trying to do.
He's fucking cooked out.
Yeah. He's a
That's the best thing ever.
Really?
Harry J. Anslinger.
4 years on this podcast, and that's all you had to do.
I've been working way too hard.
Hi, I'm Larry, and you're listening to
best
podcast about
I would listen
Welcome
to that.
Welcome to the podcast about... I better do that again for Ryan. The podcast, a podcast about...
rare and exotic birds. Now, yeah, he became addicted to morphine. Now, Harry J. Anslinger, head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, became aware of McCarthy's addiction in the 50s and demanded he stop using the drug. Instead of, you know, showing up like, you know, somebody showing up to your door to say you're part of the Communist Party, mm-hmm. you know, he said, no, you can't do it, man. And McCarthy refused. Helpful. In Anslinger's memoir, The Murderers, McCarthy is anonymously quoted as saying, and I quote, I wouldn't try to do anything about it, Commissioner. It will be the worst for you. And if it winds up in a public scandal and that should hurt this country, I wouldn't care. The choice is yours.
Aye, aye, Toe Gunner McCarthy.
Toe Gunner.
Toe Gunner.
Hail Gunner.
Hail Gunner. I like Toe Gunner better, though.
Man, that would be the worst. Imagine going to war and, like, you just be that guy who goes shoots people's big toes off so they see if they fall over.
All five.
Ah, my toe!
Dance, fucker, dance! Oh. God, Toe Gunner.
Well, that's your show. We'll see you next week on the...
For reals.
Verdict. One corner. Joseph McCarthy has only told truths.
The other corner. Four commies.
Four commies.
Yeah, why not?
Z Kyle. We're Nazis, I guess. No, we're not.
No.
Niente. Strike that, reverse it.
One of us is a video game Nazi.
True.
No, because I love video games.
Yeah, but
so much that you want to eradicate all the other video games. Just kidding.
I'm gonna
wants to put the triple. Never mind. I'm not even gonna go there.
He puts an Xbox in a gas chamber. He's like,
you won't sleep in.
You're doing it for me.
Sorry.
There's that stepping on toes again. You got your steel toes, Leary.
That's what, no, it's why you need a toe gunner.
All right, so we have to ask ourselves truthfully, do you think that what this man did this is hard, because I thought about this earlier today and I was like, does it make sense? No.
Do you think he was doing this in a place, at a good
in
place?
The right place.
In the right place.
Yeah.
In his mind.
Do you think he did this in the right place? Yeah, that's true. That's probably the best way you can put it.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to jump out there, they can go, or I'll go.
I'm going to say absolutely not. We know that this guy's history is sordid. He's a pathological liar. We know that he was doing everything he can to get all eyes on him. He wanted to have the spotlight, even taking spotlights away from Hollywood actors, musicians, anybody he could, so that he was the center of attention. He wanted to be
a spotlight from a woman who couldn't see spotlights.
Exactly. He wanted to be the big hero. Why else would he lie about all the things he did in war that he didn't do? Mm-hmm. He wanted to be the hero, and so that's why he was trying to bring down them damn commies.
Hey, guys, Helen Keller's in the walk-in closet. Should we tell her?
Tell someone to tell her not to shit in the laundry basket again?
Sitting in the mop bucket again.
God damn it. Sick of finding turds on my work shirts. So, God damn, she's growing a tail on my pants again. With some monster turds too.
Can somebody tell her to stop eating mushrooms?
Yeah, the Lord. That woman can grow a tail.
Oh my God.
Well put, Josh.
Yeah, it just seems like that's all he ever cared about. So when it comes to bringing down these people, he didn't care who he was bringing down as long as he could say, I got another one. I got another one. Even if it was innocent. So yeah, this guy's an asshole, and I hope he enjoys burning in hell because he's a dick.
He's eating Bosco sticks in hell.
Whoa, hey.
Nah, don't bring he's drinking in hell.
April, you got a good...
Yeah, I think as much as I don't like him, I think initially it probably started in the right place. But I think the bigger it got, he was a power tripper. Like, obviously, he made shit up from when he was in the military. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a tendency to inflate his own ego. So wouldn't... I mean, that was the ultimate ego inflation, as being the central topic
of
every news story.
I'm going to save America.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before, if not, you know, internationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, before he made that speech where he called out 15 people in government who were commies, he was on track to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So really? He found a formula that was going to work for him.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, just saying. Mm. But I know do you have any more?
No, I think that's it. I just, you know, I think the idea of something quote unquote patriotic, like ridding the country of commies, like I
don't
get,
kneel during this. Oh.
Well, and especially in the 50s when, you know, you're coming right immediately after a war.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure.
Against commies.
Exactly. You know, that was. Did he use it to his advantage? Yeah. But did he do a lot of what he did to use to his advantage? I don't know. I think initially probably he was. I think he got caught up in the power trip.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Fine.
That was perfect. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, Josh kind of nailed it. I think also when you bring up this fact that he was losing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is nothing new. Maybe it was at the time, but I mean, this is politics.
Right.
You find a buzzword and you just beat people over the head with it.
It was a bit of a Hail Mary. Like,
I think
that it just happened to be a perfect Hail Mary. He was a
pathological liar as well. And I think that was his downfall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to agree with Larry. He was a pathological liar. I think there probably would have been clues early on. Because you can't go on Wikipedia or online and suss these things out.
And then, today either, because you don't know what's true online either.
Yeah.
Very true. I think he always had a vision of himself rising above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to this conservative mindset of like, we're the free country. We have the free freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want anybody taking over us. We want to be able to start companies and grow and make money and make investments. And the free market is great and capitalism is great. I get those ideas. I do. But with this guy, he ran in a direction that hurt the public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for us to, I mean, if all of a sudden we showed up to the podcast and we're constantly worried about somebody having communist issues, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. if all of a sudden we all suspected Josh of being communist.
I have my suspicions.
Fail.
But we're just like, hey, Josh, what do you think about, I don't know, everybody being...
What do you think of me I'll split up all our land equally and all our money equally.
He's like, these are some great ideas.
He's like, I got a high school boner right now. I do.
Well, let me show you this pamphlet.
Let me school you guys on it.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't care what the three of you believe in as far as that goes when it comes to politics. Mm-hmm. What I care about is that we show up and do the show. You don't have to be on time. It's fine.
Clearly.
I've been late to the show before, and I live and here.
You live here, yeah.
Yeah.
Josh is pooping again.
Yep. What I care
every
about
time
is your integrity and your souls mm-hmm. and your beautiful personalities. And I personally just think it was a shit show, and I hope it never happens again. I really don't.
It ruined a lot of lives. I mean, think of the people who got called to testify who weren't commies and had to go back to their normal lives after that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Helen Keller's still confused.
Yeah. She never heard about it.
That's your verdict.
You know, he may have lied about a lot of things, but you know what isn't a lie?
What?
Is the great value you get by going to Beer City Media Podcast at patreon.com mm-hmm. and subscribing for the cost of a couple of double cheeseburgers.
Mm-hmm. Comrade.
Thank you.
Thank you, comrade.
What was it? They had the Socialist Democrat meeting that was on YouTube, and instead of them clapping, they did something.
They snap because it wouldn't scare people.
Yeah, that dumbest shit I've ever seen. It's one of the dumbest shits I've ever seen.
If you do jazz hands, that's sign language for clapping.
Yeah, there's that too.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why this wouldn't be effective.
You'd have to ask Helen Keller, but then again, she couldn't see it.
You can't ask her either because she wouldn't hear it.
No. The lost
Do you think she enjoyed sex?
What kind of noises did she make?
What? That's her O sound.
What was Helen Keller's O sound?
Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
I want you guys to realize in this moment of sobriety that we just talked about Helen Keller fucking.
That was it. That's it. That's Helen Keller.
Helen Keller got that WAP. Macaroni in a pot.
Oh my God.
Oh Jesus.
All right. Well, hey,
that's just her asking for something to eat.
We love her contributions. Mm-hmm. We really do. Again, we make fun of ourselves on the reg. So please don't get offended. 1 star. Helen Keller was my hero.
Helen Keller bashing. Oh, Jesus.
Does anybody have anything they want to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
Play guitar and I finger chicks.
Damn, Josh.
Whoa.
Well, it sounds like you need to throw a little thing about your album.
Play guitar and I finger chicks.
My favorite song on the new album.
My God.
Play guitar and I finger chicks.
Macaroni fingers.
Check out Bosco. Food for thought.
Boscoshoop.bandcamp.
Thank you. There, we got you.
Yes. See, you don't even have to do a damn thing.
No.
That's right. It may be free, but you could also throw me a couple shekels.
You should throw him a couple of bones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way the show goes, I should say money instead of bones, because you might get a couple picks.
That's true.
You played a few of his select tracks
this
episode.
Indeed.
And we love Josh.
Indeed we do.
He's our brother.
Send Larry some money, too. I don't know why, but just do it.
Because I like money.
Yeah.
Well, if you're on the Patreon, you're already technically doing that. I just have to make sure I know when it comes in, because Patreon's being a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They are not putting the pay in Patreon.
Mm.
not as quickly. It, on the first, is it takes is it a COVID out thing? And then I don't know what it is.
Businesses are just slacking up and like, oh, I'm COVID.
Well, they take it out.
They're going to change their name to the Checks in the Mail Trion.
I owe you Trion.
Well, no, they take it out on the first because I see the receipt.
Right. But oh, then, they'll take it on time.
Yeah,
when I see it actually go in, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to assume it'll happen on the third, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple days to process.
Right.
No. Fifth, no. Eighth, no. Tenth, maybe.
You know what?
There's a few times where it's come early.
Well, they hired Helen Keller.
It's just hitting like the delete key on accident.
What's funny is that I put the Patreon payment past that, like on the 7th, so that it would, I thought for sure it was going to be like, I'll get it. Nope. Never. Never. It's always me paying for Patreon or not Patreon. Yes. Patreon. Whatever. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever our hosting costs are.
Right.
And I'm like, fuck. Great.
Fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck.
Oh, well, anyway. Hey.
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 Do you want to do a hint for the next episode?
We can. Or what we style can talk of an about... episode?
Let's just end the show.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
A presentation of Beer City Media.